Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Listening to another episode of Lords of Limited with your hosts Ben Wernie and Ethan Sachs.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Wernie, and joining me on the line, fresh off of GP Providence, we have Ethan Sachs, one of the team members of hashtag Team Casual. How you doing?
I'm great. How could I be anything other than great after that wonderful introduction?
Yeah, man. I was so jealous. I was like longingly looking at Twitter all weekend when I was at Marching Band thinking, man, I wish I was at GP. It seems like the place to be right now.
Oh, man. It was really fun, actually, despite hashtag spoilers, how our team did. But yeah, like as my first foray into live magic, I really enjoyed myself. I might have even maxed out on magic for the weekend, which is saying a lot for me. I know. But it's just like, that's a long day of magic. That get there at 9 a.m. thing, that is a grind, my friend.
Yeah, I know exactly how you were feeling, I think.
Yeah.
When you were, yeah. Anyway, I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on the GP. We haven't talked about this at all yet. So
yeah.
can you tell me a little bit about like how you guys went about prepping for the GP?
Sure. Okay. So we did a little bit of like getting on the same page before we arrived in Providence on Friday, which basically consisted of, like, I did a commons ranking sheet that I know you've seen that I sent out to them just to try and make sure we were kind of on the same page about where we were grouping commons so that when we were sorting our pools, there wasn't anything like, whoa, why do you have this in the unplayables pile or whatever?
Right, just as like a discussion point for the team.
Yeah, exactly. And the responses that I got from Sam and Justin, so I teamed, for people who don't know, I went to the GP with two other Twitch streamers, Sandball49 and 11 Secret Herbs and Spices, whose name is Justin. So their responses to that email, the spreadsheet, was they were basically on the same page, like a couple different, like, I have this a little lower than you, I have this a little higher than you. But it was also really great that they were so invested in it also, like they had clearly thought about it a lot. So then we arrived in Providence Friday, like late morning, early afternoon, and did a like practice event at the convention center, which was like fun practice to get it in like timed. We didn't have to register pools or anything, but it was good to like...
Oh, so it was like an official thing through the GP?
Yeah, so they had like warm-up events. So like you and three other teams would do a team sealed, and then it was like a Swiss event, like you would...
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. And so we did that, and that was great. And we like won our first round and then split prizes with the other team that won their first round and that. So, but it was like good practice. And then we just went back to our Airbnb and opened up. I think we did a total of 4 practice pools, including the side event, in prep for the GP on Saturday.
Yeah, I think I caught your last one on Twitch. That was super cool that you guys were streaming that.
Yeah, that was really fun. I mean, I know it's like hard, like the cards were far away and whatever, but it felt like worth doing rather than worth not doing. So we felt pretty good. It was also interesting, like, so Sam had gone to GPs before and Justin and I had not. So he was also good about, and he'd done team GPs as well. So he felt that he was really good about asking us, like when we would be done building the pools, then be like, okay, what decks would people play?
Right.
And so it felt like going into the event on Saturday that he was probably going to pilot the blue-based, like, tempo aggro decks better than anyone else, like, and that's what he wanted to play. And we often, I think all of our pools ended up with a white-black vampire deck, and Justin, it felt like that was best for him. And it felt like either the green ramp deck with dinos, or it was going to be a green-based, like, jank deck with whatever other good cards we had, and that was going to go to me. And I think, and that felt right, like, those decks were going to be like a bit grindier, and I maybe a bit more difficult to pilot, and also might be splashing multiple things. And that is all stuff that I'm like comfortable with and the things sure. I like to do in the format.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
So that was also really nice that it didn't feel like everyone was like, well, I want to play the pirate deck. It felt like we all sort of slotted into the various, we sort of filled the gaps of the decks that the format offered, which is kind of a bummer for what this format does offer, which is it only offers a handful of decks. You're not seeing a lot of intricate things. Like, basically all of our pools all had a green ramp deck with like dino payoffs or something like that. And then maybe green could split into green, blue merfolk, or green had to be by itself. We usually found that blue had a main deck. So either that was going to be a blue, black, or blue, red pirate tempo deck.
Mm-hmm.
And then we always found a black-white vampire deck. I mean, we just happened to open up a bunch of payoffs.
Yeah, I think black-white is one of the most tribal things going on in the format, like vampires. And I think when it comes together in draft, it's been pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, you actually have a payoff at common with Anointed Deacon, which a lot of these tribes don't have. And you have the, like, uncommon payoffs in the bishop that drains them, and you've got the one-mana 1/1, the Sky March, that pumps attacking vampires.
Yeah, pumps
vampires,
the attacking, like, creatures, yeah.
So you don't need to open, like, rares or mythics to feel like you get the payoffs.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, that's the thing I feel pretty strongly about black-white vampires that's nice about it. And I think the other thing it does really well, not to get, like, too far ahead of ourselves here, but no. I think it preys really well on Merfolk, which I think people have slotted as one of the best decks early on in the format. And I think the lifelink from vampires is just super hard to overcome for the Merfolk deck.
Yeah, Merfolk, and if you have an aggro pirate deck, just, like, a lot of those aggro decks, as we saw in aggro decks in Hour of Devastation, like, they fold to incidental life gain. It's really hard to combat that when your opponent is racing you and cracks you back for two and gains two off their 2/2 bishop or whatever. Yeah.
It sounded like you had the decks thought out that you were trying to build. Did you have any, like, big thoughts on the format going to the GP? Like, did you think it was aggressive? Did you think the team sealed was slower? What did you, like, any big,
so,
broad ideas like that?
As someone who had never played Team Sealed before, but it seemed like everyone was saying this, and this is what Sam said, and he was on my team, so I trusted him, that Team Sealed decks are often better than draft decks. And that was certainly my experience. The decks we saw from the pools that we built on Friday were better than the draft decks I had seen practicing online during the week.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. I mean, you not only have the opportunity to open the rares that go in certain archetypes, like the, I'm forgetting what it's called, the Seeker of the Bloodstained or whatever, the Hellbiter, as people are calling it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the vampire that basically makes it so whenever your vampires attack, they drain your opponent.
Sanctum Seeker. That's
Sanctum
the name
Seeker,
of it.
Thank you. Well done. So when you open that in your 12 packs, you're probably going to be able to support it with a vampire deck, whereas if you open it in draft, that deck may not come together, or you may get cut or whatever. Like, so we often found that if you opened the payoffs, you could support them. So that sort of made sense that those decks did seem a little more powerful. Yeah, I mean, we found that the decks that we were seeing in our testing were what we ended up playing against. Like, it felt like every team had a green-based dino deck, a vampire deck, and then some two of the three Grixis color pirate deck was often the thing. Or a merfolk deck.
Right.
So the format felt, and a lot of those, besides the ramp decks, are fast. So I think the format is fast, and if your ramp deck wants to survive, you still have to have early game. Like, that was the thing that we found in those decks, is you needed to have two drops that could, like, Ixalis Diviner was great in those decks because you wanted an 0/3 that got you a land, or you wanted a 1/4. Like,
yep.
You needed stuff to be able to survive until you got your 3/4 reaches out and your 6/6 tramplers out and all that.
Yeah. So what was your specific pool like when you sat down on Saturday?
So we sat down on Saturday. I was like really nervous. This is one of my takeaways from it. Like, this is my first big like event and I really wanted to do well and I'm very competitive. And I think I sort of like forgot to have fun that day, which is a, like, I realized once we like stopped playing in the main event and we played a side event and then we were like sort of like joking around and I was like, oh right, like this is what it should be like,
right? Yeah,
but it's tough when you like invest a lot of money and time into something you want to do well. And so I was pretty, I think I was like overly serious.
No, I understand that feeling too from going to GP Indy. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Like I hope I learn from it for whenever my next event is, because I definitely want to do another team event. But so our pool that we opened, so the way it works is you get assigned a seat and you sit across from another team and they open their packs in front of you.
Yeah.
So like you see there's no funny business. Then you open your packs in front of them so they see there's no funny business. Then you swap cards with them and they register all the cards in your pool.
Mm-hmm.
We had in our four packs, we had not opened a mythic except for Overflowing Insight.
Oh, no.
In our four practice packs. So we were like, we're due, right? We're due for a Planeswalker. The dude across from me, the first pack he opens to spread out in front of me has Vraska in it.
Oh, card's like, so good.
I was like, you guys, golly, this is going to be terrible. So, but actually the pool that we ended up opening for ourselves was, I think, the best of the five that we had seen.
Oh, that's good.
So no, we didn't end up with any mythics, but almost, if not all of our rares were playable, which is saying a lot in this format.
That is saying a lot in this format.
We didn't get any rare lands, which is really lucky. And a lot of our rares were bombs. So we got like Burning Sun's Avatar, the red dino that's like a Flame Tongue Kavu. Mm-hmm. We had Enchanting Melody, that's the control magic effect.
Oh, yeah.
We had Sanctum Seeker.
The card's disgusting.
Right, so we had that. We had the Merfolk Landmaker, the like two green, what is like Waker of the Winds or whatever. Waker of the Wilds.
Yeah, that card's good.
We had the Vanquisher's Banner, the artifact that anthems your team.
Your pool sounds insane.
Yeah, we had the 3/3 bird, the like pirate flash that like taps two things.
Yeah.
So like all of our rares were very good. So like no mythics.
That sounds great.
Right. So our rares were good. So I'm like looking at this pool and I'm like, I think this is the best thing we've seen so far. And Sam is like, shut up. Like, what are you doing? Like hyping us up.
So
our decks build themselves pretty well. Like we are able to build a pretty strong vampire deck, which is where the Vanquisher's Banner ends up going, because in our experience playing the day before, the vampire deck can run out of gas. So the Vanquisher's Banner was nice to be able to not only pump up the 1/1s, which is where I think it's best, but also to let that deck not die in the late game if it gets there.
Yeah.
We had the blue green Merfolk uncommon. We had some of the green aggro Merfolk cards, but not a ton. So our initial instinct was to build a blue green Merfolk deck, which we ended up passing on to just build a like base blue aggro pirate deck with a few red cards. But we had like 2/1 with the winds. We had 2 Siren Storm Tamers to be able to protect the things that had the 1 with the winds on them. We had like,
ooh, yeah, that's good.
2 of the Stormfleet Spies that draw a card, like the 3-mana 2/2 raid draw card. We had like, I think 2 Pirate Cutlasses. It was just like a really streamlined aggro deck, and that's where the control magic effect went. And we also had the Tempest Caller. That's the Merfolk that taps everything when it comes to play.
Yeah, that card's done work for me already.
And then we just had like a really solid green-red dino deck. We had the Dino Lord that 6-mana makes a 3/3 Trampler. Then that's where Burning Sun's Avatar went. That deck also had Charging Monstrosaur, and like a lot of like good green removal.
That was what I was going to ask. I haven't heard you mention a lot of removal. Did your pool have good removal?
Yes. So we actually didn't open any Contract Killings, which was a bummer. But the Vampire deck had a Pious Interdiction and an Ixalan's Binding, as well as a couple Vanquish the Week, so that was set. Blue-red, I think, had like some Bounce and a Lightning Strike, I think. And then my green deck had a Savage Stomp, a Pounce, I'm trying to remember, the Burning Sun's Avatar, and a lot of good sideboard options. And that was one of the big takeaways. So you have to like register all the cards in your pool to someone's deck. So like my sideboard was enormous because I was the only green deck, so I just had all the green cards we opened in my sideboard.
Yeah.
So having access to all those cards really makes you think a lot after you play game one of your match, which I want to get to in a little bit. But I guess this is like a pretty natural progression to start talking about the rounds. So I have some notes about each round, if you don't mind.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So round one, I played against a Naya Dino's deck. that had Huatli and double Savage Stomp. Ooh. So I lost in two games to that deck. And I like felt bummed out because I was like, I was really high. I thought our decks were like all eights, basically. Like I thought they were really strong decks. And
yeah, it sounds like it.
I felt like I played against a better deck. So I didn't really feel bad. I didn't feel like I made any mistakes against that opponent. But I lost in two games, and our team took a loss for the round. So we started off the tournament 0-1, unfortunately.
Yeah, that feels bad.
It feels bad. It does. Like, it
just kind of sucks the air out of your sails.
Right. Round two, I played three games against a blue-white skies deck that resolved the, what's that card? The upheaval, the one-sided upheaval.
So which of these three, hang on one second, which of these three decks were you playing?
Oh, sorry. Thank you. I was playing the green-red dino deck.
Okay, green-red dinos. Yeah, I'm trying to think of from a matchup perspective.
Yeah, so I played the green-red dino deck, Justin played the white-black vampire deck, and Sam played the blue-red pirate deck. Game one against the blue-white skies deck, he came out the gate like really fast, like two-drop, three-drop, maybe like two-drops or something. I stabilized at six life, and then he top-decked River's Rebuke. I thought I was turning the corner. I think I might have even been starting to attack with Charging Monstrosaur. And he cast River's Rebuke, bounced all my stuff, and attacked me for the rest of the six damage. So nothing I could do there.
Yeah.
I won game two, and in game two, I saw two of the plus two to a creature, the one white plus two to a creature that gives a vampire first strike.
Oh, yeah, Mark of the Vampire.
Right. No. That's the enchantment.
Oh, no, that's the enchantment.
I think it's like Vampire Strike or Zealous Strike or something like
vampire
that.
Vampire Zeal.
Zeal. There we go. God, thank God we're not doing name that card today. So I saw two of those, and then in game three, my opponent was repping it pretty hard, and I was playing. I think the only mistake I made in the day, which is pretty. I don't think I'm being hyperbolic. I think this is the only mistake I made in the day, which is I was playing around this trick, and I'm not sure I could have beaten it anyway. So I was in this really awkward position where they were leaving up a white mana, and they had a 4/4 in play, mm-hmm. and I had Charging Monstrosaur, and I had Pounce.
Oh yeah.
And so I really needed to, his 4/4s were Air Elemental and the Glorifier of the Dusk, the one that can become a Sarah Angel if you pay life. But you can't really, if I go to Pounce, I'm, setting myself up for a 2/1 if he has the +2/+2.
Yeah.
And he knew I had Pounce. I forget how he saw my hand I think maybe I revealed it off of an Explorer. So he knew I had it. So he was just, leaving up one white mana, but ended up he didn't have that. He had a different trick. The turn after. So the turn where he was bluffing it, or maybe I don't know if he was intentionally bluffing it or not, but that was the turn that I think I might have been able to win that game. And that was unfortunate because I think Sam had won his match, Justin has lost his, I'm in game three of mine.
Yeah.
And I'm not able to pull out the W. So we're now 0-2, which is just really tough. Yeah. But this is one of the great things about the team event. If you're by yourself, that's really bad, but Sam and Justin are there to help cheer me up, and they did. So it was really great. So round three, I'm against a red-white aggro deck. Really tough to figure out how to turn the corner against, the 3/5 Enrage. Your boy,
The Bellowing Aegisaur.
Bellowing Aegisaur. So, my opponent's, attacking me with it. They've got, because they're white-red, they've got, some vampire tokens. It's I don't want this to die, but I'm in green-red, so I don't know how I'm able to, get through this thing.
Right.
But 7/7 land from my Waker and the 5/5 Bonded Horncrest were able to get through. I think he sort of felt like he was able
which
to
ones, which one's
it.
Bonded Horncrest?
Oh, the 5/5 4 mana 5/5 that can't attack or block alone.
Oh yeah, okay.
So I make a note for myself. This is the first time I'm reading the notes that I made. I said, I wonder if I'm leveling myself thinking about Settle the Wreckage and Bright Reprisal. I like playing around them a lot, but I think that I see my white opponent pass with mana up, and I am very, very conscious of both of those cards, especially...
I think you're supposed to be.
Especially when someone opens 12 packs, seeing Settle the Wreckage is not crazy unlikely. I don't know. So in a pool like that. But I did turn the corner in that first game, and then my opponent mulled to 5 in game 2, and I pull out the W, and actually all three of us, I think me and Justin finished our matches first, but Sam was probably going to win his game 2.
So nice.
We're 1-2. All right, round four, I'm against white-black vampires. I drew, like, the top half of my deck both games. My opponent sort of was like, I feel like I could turn my deck face up. We turn our decks face up, and there's, like, nothing I can do against yours. Like, right. He had the 6-mana 4/4 that you can rebuy from your graveyard by tapping 3 vampires.
Oh, the Deathless Ancient?
Yeah, he had that. And that was... He had that in game two, and I was like,
now,
oh, man.
Now I see why you didn't want to play Name That Card. I'd have crushed you.
You would have destroyed me. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's why would I want to play again? You're the undefeated champion.
I know.
Yeah. I think after every game in my matches, I sideboarded, which is not something I do when I normally draft. And I think that's partially because I didn't have access to like 40 cards to look at or whatever.
Right, yeah.
But I think one of my big takeaways is I need to sideboard more, or I really need to like not click through those 2 minutes as quickly as I often do. Because every game I was like, okay, I saw this, so I think I'm going to take out like... I took out Bonded Horncrest a lot, the thing that couldn't attack or block alone against, like, tempo decks or aggro decks, and tried to, like, replace it with a 3-4 reach. But, like, in this matchup against white-black, I brought in, for the first time, the... I'm just going to describe the card. So, the 1 in a green instant that says when this creature dies, return it to your hand and you draw a card.
Is it, like, Verdant Regrowth or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, there you go. Rebirth, maybe. Or Regrowth, yeah. Anyway, so I brought that in against white-black, because I was like, they're probably, like... They're going to have removal spells where they're not going to have, like, they have no way to blow me out with this card.
Right.
And that card, I think, 4-for-1'd my opponent. Oof. Like, so they, I attacked with Charging Monster Sword. He, like, lined up all his creatures. I put the 2 that I wanted to kill in front. So I killed 2 things, drew a card off of it, bounced it back to my hand, and then Charging Monster Sword traded with 2 things again.
Nice.
So I was like, that felt great, because that really did feel like a way that I got ahead in that second game. So game 2, win that game, and again, I don't remember who finished first, but I do know that was another time where like felt like all 3 of us were gonna 2-0 our matches. So
right, yeah,
we're out, we're even, we're 2-2, so feeling better, but still, like, you know, Sam's now like, we're 2-2, like, we just have to, like, we have to 4-1 a 5-round league. And I was like, yeah we could do that.
Yeah, that seems doable, yeah.
That seems doable when you put it that way, right?
Yeah.
So, because for those of you who don't know, you have to 6-3 or better to make day 2. So, round 5, unbeknownst to me, we are playing against a pro team-ish. I don't know how pro all the members are, but my opponent is a pro. I looked him up afterwards because Sam told me who he was. His name is John Stern, and he's like... been in like a billion pro tours. He's like won 2 Grand Prix.
That's super legit.
Yeah. So I played against him here. He was on a green white dinos deck. In game 2, I got down. He was at 20 life and I was at 1.
Okay.
And I just like top decked. I just like drew the cards that I needed to draw in the order, like Unfriendly Fire to kill his flyer, then Burning Sun's Avatar to like kill something and have a body on board, and then Waker of the Wilds just like got me out of the flooded state I was in. Just like kept turning my lands into creatures at end turn, and then I was able to claw my way back. He didn't draw any gas, and I won that match 2-0.
Yeah, those feel good.
Which felt great, but unfortunately could not win a team, win out the match as a team. I think Sam lost, and then Justin got to game 3 and mulled to 5.
Ooh.
And I think actually was going to win if his opponent didn't cast River's Rebuke.
Oh, God. That card's so depressing. I haven't even played against it, and I can imagine how depressing it is.
It's really demoralizing. You're just like, oh, I feel like this. I'm playing a fair game, and I'm like, oh, and no, I have not. Nope, I don't get to play. Like, that, why is that not mythic?
Yeah, instead of the draw 7 cards.
Right, exactly. In round 6, I played against a Grixis treasure deck that had Vance's Blasting Cannons. This was our last round, so I didn't like immediately take notes about it, so I don't remember much about it. But I won in 3 games because of sideboarding. Like, I brought in, I saw, I think, Vance's Blasting Cannons, and I saw, I believe he had the Fell Flagship, the 3-3
oh, yeah.
Vehicle. And so I brought in Slice and Twain for that to like blow those things up. And then I was seeing flyers that I had problems dealing with after game 2. So in before game three, I brought in Crushing Canopy, which ended up killing his Vance's Blasting Cannon.
That's the one that can blow up a flyer or an artifact, right?
Right.
A flyer or an enchantment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So I blew up his Blasting Cannon in game 3, which is, I think, what allowed, like, he stopped drawing gas and I was able to turn the corner. And then again, unfortunately, came down to Justin in game 3, and we was not able to pull it out. Had a really weird situation where, like, we had to attack all out.
Yeah.
Like, our opponent was racing us. They, like, attacked with a bunch of stuff. We played Anointed. They thought they, on the crackback, they were going to go to one, but we played, he played Anointed Deacon, which was going to put his opponent to negative one with the +2/+0 attack trigger.
Yeah.
But, like, we were forced to attack. And when we went to move to attack, like, when we played that card, his teammate, so in poker, there's a thing called Hollywooding where, like, you, like, you're acting.
Yeah.
Like, to, like, get your opponent to do something.
Yeah.
And so we played Anointed Deacon, and his teammate goes, like sighs audibly, like, ugh.
Yeah.
And so we swung out, and then they played Snapping Sailback, the five mana 4/4 flash. So they were able to block, and so they weren't dead, and
sure.
Then we were dead on the crackback. But, like, the energy that, the mental energy that went into him sighing was very confusing to me, because I was like, we are forced to do this thing.
Right.
Like, we're going to swing out, so... You have a thing or you don't have a thing. It doesn't matter. Like, anything sure. kills us here. So
sure.
So that's how we ended the tournament in 2-4, and we dropped and then promptly joined a team draft.
Nice.
Which was my first foray into team drafting, which we did not win, but was very fun.
Yeah. I want a team draft so bad. Is it awesome? Yeah. Is it as awesome as I think it is?
I think in this set it did not seem that awesome, just because, like, I didn't find myself cutting a lot of stuff because there's not a lot of powerful stuff.
Right.
But it is, it's just like another level of thing. You just feel like hyper focused on the packs and, like, seeing what's wheeling and all that.
Right. I think it would appeal to me a lot.
Oh, I bet. So I just have, like, a few takeaways from the GP that I wanted to talk about.
Yeah. What are they?
So I'm going to toot my own horn a little bit. Like, I played very well. And I say that as a, like, I cannot tell you the last time I played Magic where I wasn't, like, also streaming.
Right.
And, like,
focusing
on Twitch chat.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Like, and so that environment of just being focused on the game, I was like, oh, I haven't done this in a while. Like, so all my attention is just on what decisions to make.
Right, sure.
And so when I say that, I think the only, and I do think my deck was the strongest of the three. So I think I had an edge there, which is maybe, like, why my games, like, broke a little better. I also think we just, like, you know, a lot of our matches went to 9 games, which is bad luck. And we, like, lost that 9th game.
Right.
So Magic is a game of variance, blah, blah, blah. But I think I just, like, my takeaway was, like, I am good at this game. And
yeah.
I probably could bring a bit more of that focus to my stream when I play. So I'm going to try and do that in the future.
You are good. And, like, it's funny, too, to, like, say, you know, you're going to toot your own horn. Like, I think you're very, as a person, you're very self-aware. So I think if you had not, like, you wouldn't say that unless it were true. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There wasn't anything where I was like, oh, man, if I hadn't done that, like, the game would have gone differently. I was like, no, I made the right decisions when I had the information in front of me, you know? I made the point about sideboarding again, but I think I just need to, I want to take more time in the future to sideboard, because I've never sideboarded so much in my life. Like, I was always swapping out, like, 1 to 3 cards after every game.
Well, and I think you have a lot more in sealed. Sideboarding matters a lot more.
For sure.
It doesn't draft. Well, or generally, you have a lot more options to choose from than you do in a draft, because you've just mm-hmm. got a bigger pool, and yeah.
And the other thing, we went to drop, and then we went to go fill out the, like, form to sign up for the team draft, and I was, like, looking right over at the coverage booth, and I was like, all right, now that the day two dream is dead, how do I get on the coverage team? Like,
I tweeted for you, man.
I know you did. So do you know the Marshall Sutcliffe coverage story origin?
No, I don't.
Oh, so he was just, like, at a GP, and he was friends with Brian David Marshall, and I don't know how they met, but BDM was just like, hey, do you want to come in the booth?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I have heard this. Yeah, I think he's told this story on the podcast before.
Right, so that's how he got started doing coverage. Is like, BDM was like, why don't you come, like, cover a match with me? And then, like, his, like, coverage career took off from there, because he's great at it. So I was like, how do I do this? How do I get them to, like, take a chance on me? I'm, like, a partnered streamer. I'm a professional actor. I think I would be very good at this. I know
you would
this
be.
Format.
You would seriously be great, yeah.
So... And this is, like, right up Sam Rubin's alley. He's just like, okay, how do we do this? Like, he loves, like, he's always like, he's like, what's your goal with your stream? What's your goal with your podcast? Like, how do we monetize it? How do we
He seems like a very, like, a goal-oriented person, yes.
He's very, I'm always like, I don't know. I'm just, like, doing it because it's fun right now. Like, so he was like, all right, how do we do this? So you're going to tweet at Marshall and Kenji, and then I'm going to tell a bunch of other people to tweet it, and we're going to, like, we'll all use the same hashtag and whatever. So we do that. And then I guess apparently someone wrote to Marshall, like, wrote it in Twitch chat. nice. GP coverage thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And Marshall was like, I don't have any say over this. Like, Rich Hagen makes all the calls.
Yeah.
So, long story, less long. I, like, saw Marshall floating around. I, like, went up to talk to him. And I was like, hey, man, I'm Ethan or Lord Tupperware. And he's like, oh, yeah, you've, like, I've been getting a barrage of tweets about you. I was like, yep, sorry about that. So I, like, talked to him, and he was, like, super friendly. And he's like, look, I don't make any of those calls. Like, Rich does. And so, like, you want to talk to him, but I would approach it like this. And it's just, like, I was so blown away by how, like, I mean, I'm not surprised, but it was surprising. I'm not surprised, but it is surprising, like, just because so few people are, like, genuine and friendly. Like, he took 5 minutes out of his day to just, like, talk to me about, like, how I should approach Rich Hagen if this is what I want.
Sure, yeah, like, that's what everybody says about Marshall, right? Like,
right.
I mean, I've never talked to him because I was too cowardly to go up to him at GP Indy, but that's what everyone says, is that he's just, like, the coolest dude on the planet.
Yeah, so then I went and talked to Rich, which I would not have done if Sam and Justin were not just like, he's right over there, go talk to him right now. I was just like, oh no, I'm too nervous.
It's like, yeah, it's like your friends getting you to go ask at a girl.
It was exactly that. So then I went and talked to Rich, and he was like, there's no way, like, just like, legally, there's no way we can get you in the booth tomorrow. But, like, what are the things you're interested in? And, like, have you ever practiced this before? And I was like, no, like, not really. He was like, all right, so, like, go do that. Like, record yourself doing it. Like, either, like, record yourself covering a match with someone. Like, if you want to be color, then find someone who's going to be play-by-play or vice versa.
You should do it. Can I do it with you?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be so fun.
So I need to make some YouTube videos like that. And he gave me his email address. So I'll, like, send him the links to those, I guess. And then maybe he'll watch them. I don't know.
That would be super cool.
But yeah, so that was, like, pretty encouraging. That was, like, that has been, like, being a partnered streamer. That has been a, like, pipe dream of mine. I was like, I think I would be really good at doing Magic coverage.
You would be really good at doing Magic coverage.
So, and just the whole weekend, I'm just blown away by Twitch. The Twitch community. Like, I went to a stream with I went to a GP with two strangers, two people I'd never met that I only met through streaming on Twitch.
Yeah.
And, like, then I had this, like, pipe dream of doing Magic coverage. And then, like, a bunch of people tweeted on my behalf that I've never met.
Right.
And, sure. Like, a bunch of strangers were like, hey, you're Lord Tupperware. Like, when I played against that, like, pro dude, one of the three people on that team was like, oh, I watch your stream. And then the dude next to him on a different team was like, oh, I watch your stream. And I was like, it was awesome. It was very cool.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Yeah. It was, I'm exhausted, but it was a really, really fun weekend, and I'm really glad I did it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right. Let's talk about some Magic, dude.
Let's do it. We're going to dive into Ixalan here. I've got we're going to take a seat at the round table here. I've got my very first draft here, my first pack one, pick one from Ixalan. We're going to see what you think about it. So take a seat, my lord.
Excellent. A throne, if you will.
A throne, yes. All right, so first up, we've got Windstrider. It's 4 and a blue for a 3/3 Merfolk Wizard with Flash and Flying. What do you think about that guy?
I think that guy's fine. Like, I don't remember what we had him in the set review. I'd probably put him at, like, C- at this point.
Yeah, I think he's a fine curve topper in the Merfolk deck.
Yeah, I think the whole cycle of 5-mana instant speed things is a pretty smart move from an R&D perspective, because it doesn't give, like, new players the feel bads, but as a, like, seasoned player, it feels like everyone gets to, like the same information. Like, you don't have to think about it at, like, 2 mana or 3 mana. It's just like, oh, they have 5 mana up. I know the things that they could have.
Yeah. All right, next we've got Skymarch Bloodletter. It's 2 and a black for the 2/2 flying vampire soldier. When Skymarch Bloodletter enters the battlefield, target opponent loses 1 life and you gain 1 life. You had this as your third best common. Is it still there?
It's still there for me, yeah. I know it is not for you, but yeah, I really like this card. I think it's, like, bread and butter of the vampire deck, and it is, like, probably just goes in any black deck. I don't think unless I have crazy pirate synergies, I just can't imagine cutting this from any black deck.
Yeah. All right, next we've got Ritual of Rejuvenation. 2 and a white for an instant. You gain 4 life. Draw a card. This still sucks, yeah?
Yep, sure does.
All right. Prosperous Pirates. 4 and a blue for a 3/4 human pirate. When it enters the battlefield, create 2 treasure tokens.
I like this card. I've only really had success with, like, a control-y Grixis treasure deck once, but I really liked it in that deck. So I look forward to being able to have this in the future, but it's not really what you want in an aggressive blue pirate deck.
No, but I do think this plays a very important role in a controlling deck. I haven't had the opportunity to draft that deck yet, but I'm on the lookout for it for sure. Next up, we've got Opt, single blue for an instant, scry 1, draw a card. The rest of the world seems to love this. Have you fallen in love?
I have not. I don't get it. Like, I don't think it's a blue signal. I don't know why people in chat are like always wanting me to take Opt out of a pack. I get that it makes your deck more consistent, like, you know, it's a very low impact to your deck, but I don't really, I'm hoping to not have this in my deck. I would rather just have a card I want to play.
Right. I think this is a fine, like, 22nd, 23rd, but I don't think it's any better than that.
No.
Next up, ooh, I like this one. This card has done some work for me. One with the Wind, one in a blue for the enchantment. Enchanted creature gets +2/+2 and has flying.
Yeah. So I went out last night with Sam and Justin, and we met up with, you know, Ryan Sachs, who's on Twitch, and he writes for Star City Games, and I was talking to him, and he, I guess, I don't know how it came up, but it was like, he was like, this is probably better than Air Elemental, and I was like, that can't be right, and he was like, wouldn't you play, like, what if it was, what if Air Elemental was 3 mana, but you had to discard a card, and it had haste, and I was like, yeah, that would be great, and he was like, that's what this is, like, you're discarding a card, but you're suiting up your 2/2 on turn 3 and has haste.
It's great.
Once he put it that way, I was like, maybe it is. Maybe it is actually better than Air Elemental in this set. And it's it probably should be cracking my top 3 blue commons, and it might be. This card is just keeps going up and up and overperforming.
Yeah, I think it's its own deck. I think like with the Hexproof Merfolk guy, and even outside of that, I think it's just fine to slam onto a 2-drop, and there's ways to protect it with like the +0/+3 and Hexproof.
And the Siren Storm Tamer, the 1-drop.
And the Siren Storm Tamer. Yeah, it's great. Yeah, I've already had a couple decks with, I had one with 4, one with the Winds.
Build your own Invisible Stalker.
Yeah, it's great. Next up, we've got New Horizons, 2 and a green for the enchant land. When New Horizons enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control. An enchanted land has tap to add 2 mana of any one color to your mana pool.
I really like this card, and I was thinking about it when we talked about it in the set review, like that, oh, I'd rather gain 3 life. But this does a kind of similar thing if you're able to go 2-drop creature into this. It's because it sort of like allows your 2-drop to move into turn 3 and 4. So like it's like turn your 2/2 into a 3/3.
Right, so it's a more relevant blocker.
Exactly. It's doing a similar thing as gaining 3 life if you're able to curve out that way. So I do like this card, and especially in Team Sealed, in the green-based jank decks I was running, or not running when we ended up in the actual main event. But I like this card a lot.
Yeah, I think it's got a similar role in the format to Gift of Paradise.
For sure.
Next up, we've got another good one. Mark of the Vampire, 3 and a black for the enchantment Aura. The enchanted creature gets +2/+2 in lifelink. I think this card's good.
Card is very good. I'm glad that we came in high on both One with the Wind and Mark of the Vampire in our set review, because they're still very good.
I think they're even better than we thought they were, because I think all of the cards are so bad that like using these to make your cards like into something awesome is just great in the format.
Okay, I'm not sick of Magic anymore. I want to draft Ixalan again right
there. Yeah, next up we've got Demolish, 3 and a red for a sorcery, destroy target artifact or land, strictly sideboard, yeah.
Yep.
Blossom Dryad, 2 and a green for a 2/2, tap to untap target land.
This found its way into more of our Team Sealed decks than I thought it would. It did
That's
not.
Interesting.
Two of them sat in the sideboard. Like when we didn't, just because the green deck wanted to ramp, or the green decks that I was building wanted to ramp. So if you didn't get Drover of the Mighty, if you didn't get New Horizons, then you probably had to grab a Blossom Dryad. But it's still certainly much worse than both of those, in my opinion.
That's what I would say, too, yeah.
And I probably am not going to be running... I had not been running them in draft prior to that. But that's often to do with, like, I think Team Sealed gives you better things to ramp into, so you're more incentivized to do so, or in draft, you may not be getting those things.
Yeah, next up, we've got Raging Swordtooth, 3 red-green for the 5/5 Trample Dinosaur. When it enters the battlefield, it deals 1 damage to each other creature. This card is just very good, yeah?
It's very good. I think I'm lower on it than I was in the set review.
Oh, that's interesting. I am not at all. Why is that for you?
I just feel like, it's just a 5-mana Trample, 5/5, which is good. That, I guess it's that Enrage, the like deal 1 damage to everything often does nothing.
I disagree. It's just going to trigger your enrage stuff, and it kills your opponent's X1s.
I know what it can do.
Oh, that's so
good.
But
I believe that it often does not do either of those things.
I don't know, man. It's going to like wipe the board against vampires, merfolk. I disagree.
All right.
That's interesting. Next up, we've got Grim Captain's Call. 2 and a black, return a pirate, then do the same for vampire, dinosaurs, and merfolk from your graveyard to your hand.
Okay, this card is worse than I thought it was.
I agree. Yes.
Because of how tribally focused decks seem to be right now. I'm not getting a lot of like decks where I feel like I have more than one creature type. And it gets a knock because in black-based decks, you would much rather have March of the Drowned than this.
Yes, I agree.
But I will say, I think it does have a home as us, and maybe this is just from the Team Sealed practice, but I think it has a home as a splash in the green ramp decks, because those decks often are cobbling together multiple things, and the ways you lose with that deck is they kill your win conditions, or you flood out, and so this gives you things to do with your mana and allows you to rebuy your bombs.
I think it's, I mean, I'm lower on it than I was as well, but I think it's fine. I've got it in, I've got a white-black deck right now that I'm in the finals of draft with that's got two of these in it. And I got cut out of, I've just got like lots of good white and black cards. Like I've got lots of great removal and lots of great cards, but I don't have any tribal synergies. So this is kind of like my payoff card for being not hard tribal.
Yeah.
Like I've got vampire, I've got like an even mix of pirates, vampires, and dinosaurs. And the creatures I'm getting back are like the 2/3 tap target creature when it attacks, the hammer skull, or I don't know, like I've just got rock solid cards to get back with it. So it I mean, it's doing fine in my deck, but I agree, we were a little high on it.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like white black is a good home for it, because then you're really covering all your tribal bases.
Yeah, I have everything except Merfolk.
Yeah.
Next we've got Call to the Feast. 2 white black for a sorcery, create 3/1/1 white vampire creature tokens with lifelink.
Yeah, this card is great. I think it's probably better than I thought it was.
Yeah, I agree.
Just because, like, I think the vampire payoffs are really real, and they're able to treat the 3/1/1s as three individual things rather than thinking about it like you're making, it's like 4 mana for 3/3 lifelink.
Yeah, I think it really takes advantage of the fact that they're split up into 3 tokens.
Yeah, for sure.
And then last, our rare, is Captain Lannery Storm. 2 red for a 2/2 haste. When Captain Lannery Storm attacks, create a treasure token. When you sacrifice a treasure, Captain Lannery Storm gets +1/+0 until end of turn.
Huh, so what are the cards... Oh, sorry, I guess we should talk about this. So Captain Lannery Storm is fine. Like, I feel like we called this, what, a C+ in the set review?
Yeah.
C+, and that's where I'm at. Like, it's good, but it feels like a common, not a rare.
Yeah, I think so, too. So for me, it was between... I was narrowed it down pretty rapidly to Raging Swordtooth, the red-green dinosaur, and Call to the Feast, the gold, the black-white gold card.
Yeah, no... What's the best common there? The Skymarch Bloodletter?
I think it's 1 with the Wind.
Oh, 1 with the Wind?
In my opinion. I think Bloodletter's close.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably take Raging Swordtooth over the Call to the Feast.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought from our discussion that you'd be higher on Call to the Feast.
I think, so Call to the Feast is only going in one deck, and you basically can only be white-black. I mean, I guess you can, it sounds like there you might have a white-black value deck that you've got insight into. But still, I think there, like, you got to be basically the only vampire drafter at the table to get a good vampire deck. Maybe it can support 2, but I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
So I feel like the Swordtooth goes in more decks, even though it feels like Dinos is overdrafted. Like, red-green Dinos is one of the most powerful decks, just because the creatures are all kind of poopy. So when you get the big, dumb red-green creatures, your deck just feels way stronger than other decks, is what I have found. And I also think green allows you to splash that. It's like you could end up in green-white or green-something and splash the red-green, whereas I don't feel like you have that opportunity with the white-black card.
Right. That's interesting. That's what I ended up settling on. I took Raging Swordtooth here.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. So... So I've got a bunch of questions here, like for me and you to talk about from the
Great.
Format, just like that I've been thinking about and that people have been talking about on Twitter and whatnot.
Oh, there's so much to discuss in this first there week,
is.
Ben.
Yeah, there is. What are some things you've been having success with? Let's start there.
So just a quick look. So I've done 15 drafts total this week, which is lower than I normally would. But I, you know, spent a day practicing sealed and then a day doing a GP and then a day traveling. So
yeah.
I haven't been able to draft as much online as I might like. And 2 of those drafts were in the competitive leagues, if you can believe
Ooh.
It, right? Where I just lit some money on fire. Hashtag never again. But I've been having a wide range of success. So my trophies have been with a blue-green ramp deck, a red-black deck with 3 Lightning Rig Crews, which...
Oh, that deck looked sweet.
Which I can confirm Lightning Rig Crew is real, and it's, like, probably the Riddle form of this set, so, like, I don't imagine I'll ever get 3 again, but the card is very, very strong. I had a, like, insane Black-White Vampires deck, a very strong Red-Green Dinos deck, and then I did get a pretty bad version of the Green-Black Explore deck, but I still was able to trophy with it. So no overlaps there. I've been sort of a lot of, and that might have to do with a lot of this week in prep for the GP was my like, I want to try this deck, or I want to try this card and try and build around it, or anything
right,
like
see
that.
Right, see what's good and what seems best to you.
To get a chance to play with as many cards as possible before the weekend. But, so, I don't know if that's directly correlated, but I have had success with a wide variety of decks, and I feel like I've gotten to try all the tribes. I haven't trophied with Merfolk, but I've 2-1'd with it a couple times. So, yeah, a lot of different things. How about you?
Yeah, I've also had success with some different things. Most of my... I've stuck to straight tribal so far. I've never splashed or been adventurous. I start off the format a little rough, so I've been in try-hard mode.
Nice.
In my first... I've done 9 drafts now, so I started off 6-6 my first 4 drafts, and I think I ran a little bad. Got paired up against a lot of the best rares in the sets in those first 4 drafts. So I have 3-0'd with Merfolk, which I can confirm is as good as everyone is raving about it on Twitter, in my opinion. I think blue-green Merfolk's kind of the new blue-red spells of this set. That's kind of the role in the format it seems to want to take to me. And then I have 3-0'd with a really good blue-red pirate aggro deck with 2 of the 4-3 looter that was an all-star in the deck, like the blue-red gold card. That card was just disgustingly good. My opponent put, like, the Pious Interdiction on it one time, and like it just looted me all the way through my deck the whole game, and it was great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I've done, those are my 2 trophies, and then I've had 3, my last 5 drafts I've been to the finals. I've had 3 finals losses, 1 with red-green dinos, I don't know if my last one's a loss. I'm kind of assuming. Jeez, that's awful. Wow. I have a deck that's in the finals right now, and I'm just
hashtag
assuming it's going to lose.
Why me?
Yeah, a red-green dinos deck that was good, and another blue-green merfolk deck that was pretty insane that lost in the finals.
Nice. Sounds like you've definitely turned the corner.
Yeah, so I think I feel a lot more comfortable in the format, which brings us to our next question. Is this format good or bad? There's some pretty strong opinions on this on Twitter. What do you think?
Yeah, so it seems like most people came out pretty negative on the format. Like, I'm such a sick degenerate with this game that I am going to have fun, like, playing Magic no matter what. Like, the people saying, like, this is the worst draft format of all time or whatever, I think that's far from correct. I do think I'm a little wary of grinding 200-plus drafts of this, which I'm going to do, like, if it has longevity, because it sort of feels like it feels like drafting mono-red in cube when you find the open deck. Like, I did a side event draft today. I second picked Bishop of the Bloodstain, the uncommon that drains your opponent, or they lose life equal to your vampires. Uh-huh. And then I was the only vampire drafter at the table. And so all my picks were basically like auto picks.
Right.
Like, I looked for things that said vampire, or I looked for black-white removal spells. That is not fun to me to draft. So I'm not looking forward to that, but I am looking forward to, like, figuring out the nuances of the format and, like, what other decks exist, like the figuring out how this treasure control deck works, or figuring out this green black explore deck, which I think is a thing, figuring out the blue white skies deck, which I think is a thing. So far I think good. I'm just happy to have something new to play with right now, but I don't know how I'll feel in a month from now. How about you?
Sure. I initially was with the rest of the world. I thought this format was miserable after my first 4 drafts, and I think I just got all of I do think this format has some bad qualities. One, I think the draft is pretty higher variance than normal.
Yes,
like if you get variance. Like if you get in the right tribe early, you get rewarded, because I think there's so few cards that are head and shoulders. Like, there's like a cut of, like, I don't know, however many cards you want to say, like 30 cards or 50 cards that are just like way better than all the other cards, and then it gets really flat really quickly in power level after that. That mm-hmm. like if you start in vampires, for example, and you realize you're not supposed to be vampires, and then you identify that whatever's open, I don't know, like, say, dinosaurs, and you move mm-hmm. in, like, by the time you move in, pick 6, there just might not be any good dinosaur cards left, because right. all the, like, there's so few strong cards. So that seems not great to me, so I experienced a little bit of that my first 4 drafts, and then I have my first 4 drafts, the board just clogged up horribly for me.
Yeah.
And I do think that's, like, a thing that can happen in this format, especially against vampires, because sometimes the vampire's deck can't attack, but yet you can't attack the vampire's deck because you're going to get cracked back for, like, millions of lifelink. So I do think the board can stall out in this format, and I think I experienced that a lot my first 4 drafts. But since then, the gameplay has been a lot more interesting. It's been a lot more races, and, like, I had a lot of tough decisions in my last, like, 5 rounds that were very fun. So I've come around on the format, and I've started winning a little bit more, which always helps, but I'm not on the form, like, I'm not thrilled about the format. Like, I think HOU is way better, but I'm not I don't think it's a bad format. I think I'm gonna have fun playing. I've like enjoyed my last five drafts that I've done. I've drafted twice today already, and I want to draft some more.
Yeah, that sounds about right, you say, though.
Yeah, so the next question I've got on this list is, can you win with a non-dedicated tribal deck? So, like, are you going to 3-0 a league without, like, having your seat be open for vampires, dinos, pirates, or merfolk? What do you think?
Yes, I think you are.
Have you done it yet?
Well, so do you count Green-Black Explorer as a non-dedicated tribal deck?
I do, yeah.
Then yes, I have.
All right, very cool.
Yeah, I think it's there, and I've done a... I guess I didn't end 3-0 with it, but I've done one YouTube video and I had sort of a, I basically did, it was like blue, black control treasure deck splashing makeshift munitions. So like, that's not really a dedicated tribal deck. It's more like dedicated treasure control deck. But I think there's stuff deeper than just looking at the creature types in this format for sure that can be successful.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was talking to Ehed Dude, who is on Twitter, and he streams now on Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, rocked the competitive leagues in HOU. I think he ended up like the leader or second or something at the end of HOU in the competitive leagues. And yeah, he was talking about the competitive queues being like, it being a lot harder. I think that's a big difference in this format between competitive and intermediate, that it's a lot mm-hmm. harder to get a nuts synergy deck of one of those tribes in the competitive queues, because people are just going to move in. People pick up on the signals quicker, and you're not going to be the only Vamps drafter, or you're not going to be the only Merfolk drafter. Like, people are fighting over those cards, because that is, like, it seems like one of the best things to do in the format.
But then doesn't draft, like, correct? Like, draft is a self-correcting format, so then don't you,
right,
like...
Right, right. So I think he was saying that the format was, in the competitive leagues, just a lot more about, like, aggression, and, like, less about tribal.
And it has to be about aggression, because the cards are so low power level, right? Like, you can't rely on... And a lot of the rares aren't even good. Like, there's a handful of bomb rares, and there's, like, some good uncommons, but most of the cards are pretty underpowered.
Right. Yeah. So, and then one of the other questions I've got is that going to happen to the intermediate queues? Like, as we go farther into the format and people learn what cards are good, like, is it going to be harder to get, like, be the only Vampires drafter or be the only Merfolk drafter and get, like, a really insane tribal deck? And I think that's probably going to be the case. I'm really curious to see how that pans out for the format.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, do you remember when, like, you couldn't get a green deck in Hour of Devastation to save your life?
Yep,
because,
I do,
like,
remember
everyone
that.
Wanted to draft it.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to happen. Like, if people, I've started to try and, I'm a little wary of Merfolk. I was a little wary of Merfolk for a few days because, like, felt like everyone was posting 3-0 decks on Twitter. I was like, this has to be the flavor of the week now, that people are going to be moving in on this, because it looks so fun. It looks, like, unbeatable.
It's my favorite deck to play by far.
But if three people at the table are drafting it, you're all going to get bad decks.
Oh, no, yeah. You have to be one of the only people in it, I think.
Yeah.
And even then, you're still, like, if my opponent, when I was playing Merfolk, if my opponent played a Plains or a Swamp turn one, I was thinking, please don't be Vampires. Please don't be Vampires. Please don't be Vampires.
It does, you sort of mentioned this, I feel like, in the set reviews, that you were like, I wonder if this is going to be like a rock, paper, scissor format.
Yeah.
I think it might be a little bit.
I think it is, yeah.
Which also feels like a knock against it.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, can Merfolk ever beat vampires? Like, can vampires ever beat dinosaurs? Like,
yeah, I see that a little bit, but it still feels fun to me. I've already experienced a little bit of that.
Yeah.
And I do think, for whatever it's worth, that leagues, at least in the intermediate queues, I think leagues exacerbate that issue. Like, that you're going to be playing in the finals, like, people that got, like, nuts drafts, like, where that they were the only vampire drafter and they probably shouldn't have been the only vampire drafter or something. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah. So how fast do you think the format is?
Like, on a scale of what? Like, 1 to 10 or something?
Like Zendikar to Hour of Devastation.
I think it's like...
Or I guess Amonkhet. Triple Amonkhet to Hour of Devastation.
Hour of Devastation.
It's funny how hard that format changed once HOU got added in.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I think it's somewhere in the middle. Like, I'm not seeing games end on turn 6. Like, it's not Zendikar fast or Triple Amonkhet fast, however fast that format was. But it doesn't feel as flexible as Hour of Devastation. It does feel like board stalls happen a fair amount. So, I don't know. I would say somewhere in the middle, like a 5 on that scale.
Yeah. I think it's a little lower than that, but I think that's mostly just because the cards are underpowered. I think the format's rewards attacking, but I don't think the games end that quickly. I guess that's how I would characterize it.
Yeah.
So we've already talked about some of these next ones on the list. Why don't we skip down? I think we nailed this in the set review that cheap Explore cards were a lot better than the expensive ones. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I want to give that mostly to you. Like, I think you really pegged that early, but I have sort of just made a line in the sand for myself at the 3-mana cost. Like, 2 and 3 drops with Explore, I love, except for Ixali's Diviner, unless I'm trying to, like, not die in the early turns.
I think Ixali's Diviner has, like, a big place in the Dinosaur ramp decks, though.
I agree, but it's, again, it's low on the totem pole. Like, if you can get, if you have a Drover, it's like you'd rather have that. If you have, I don't know, you might rather have a 2/2 that can actually tussle rather than the 1/4, because when it's an, you want it to be a, you want it to be Dune Beetle. When it's an 0/3 that gives you a land, you're not that psyched, I've found. But maybe that's just my experience with it.
I don't know, I've come up on the card since the set review.
Oh, nice. But yeah, the 4s and the 5s and the 6s are not the Explore cards that I want in my life.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll run some of the 4s, but I think that depends on, like, if you need cards that say Pirate on them, or if you need cards that say whatever on them.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the Menace one is okay, but the Haste one is bad. Brazen Buccaneers, come on.
It seemed fine to me. It, like, in black-red, I face down, I really want to draft this deck, and I haven't been able to yet. Like, the black-red or the blue-black Pirates deck with March of the Drowned. Like, I think March of the Drowned is insane in those
decks.
March of the
Drowned is so good, yeah.
And, like, getting back, buying, like, if you miss on that 2/2 haster, like, getting to buy it back and roll the dice again to see if it's a 3/3 haste is fine. I mean, it's not great. It's not, I don't think it's a good card, but I think it's fine. Any other thoughts on Explore there?
It's not as backbreaking a mechanic as I thought it was going to be. I think I was like, oh, this is such a good mechanic. All the Explore cards are going to be super powerful. And it just feels like you mostly want to not hit lands.
The one that feels the dirtiest to me is Merfolk Branchwalker. Like the one in a green 2/2.
The two mana 2/1. Yeah, that can become a
3/2. They become a 3/2. But you're fine either way. Like either way, you just feel like nuts. Like if you're wanting to hit a land there, and if you get a 2-mana 3/2, like it's still very good. And the 2/1, the white 2/1 first strike feels very
Sunrise
good.
Sunrise Seeker or whatever.
Yeah, and the black one, the Squire or whatever, the one in a black 1/2. Yeah, I mean the cheap ones we already.
The uncommons are good for sure. Yeah. But they mostly feel like Tashana's Wayfinder, like that's fine when it finds a land. The pirate, it's a bummer when that's a 1/2 flyer for 3. I think.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
But blue has a lot of ways to like bounce it or rebuy it. Like if you bounce it with the Storm Sculptor or whatever, then you can have a chance to get the counter back on it or whatever.
Yeah. So this is one I was wrestling with early on in the set, and I think I have my answer now. So my question for you is, do you think you're supposed to force more than normal, especially if you get a very good rare, because the best cards in the set feel so much better than all the rest of the cards?
Yeah, I think if, like, you open Hostage Taker, you're, like, you have to play that. You're, like, you need to play that card, like, 90% of the time or something.
That's how I feel, yeah.
So
can confirm, I've already lost to Hostage Taker in 2 separate drafts.
Yeah, I mean, that card is absurd. Just because there aren't a lot of bomb rares. Like, you're opening lands, or you're opening constructed playable cards. You're not opening good limited rares. And I also think you are supposed to, like, I don't think you're supposed to, like, see if Vampires is open and then take Bishop of the Bloodstained. I think you're supposed to, like, take Bishop of the Bloodstained and hope.
Yes, I agree completely. And I think if it's not, I think you're supposed to be very willing to move off of it. But yeah. I think you want to take the payoff cards like super, super, super aggressively.
I agree. Yeah, I think especially because they're at higher rarities, so you're not going to see them that much.
Yeah. And one thing I've just kind of, in my last 5 drafts, I think this format's going to reward racing skills. Like I've ended up, when the board hasn't stalled out, I've ended up in a race a lot, and I've had a lot of very close decisions, and I think it's going to reward knowing how to race and knowing when you're the beatdown and when you're not the beatdown, and like when you've turned the corner, like if you've been defensive at the beginning, when you've turned the corner and when you can switch to aggression or how you can turn the race in your favor. I think those are all going to be big things in this format, and that is like when the board doesn't stall out. I think that's very interesting and something that we didn't get to experience that often in Hour of Devastation.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I had a lot of those decisions yesterday in the GP, like, because my deck was good late game, but my early drops were just, like, ramping or, like, blocking. And so I did have a lot of those points of, like, is this the turn where I'm supposed to attack? Do I finally have the board presence to be able to start turning the race in my favor? And that is a really tough decision. Like, when your life total is super low, you're scared to start attacking. I think it's very easy to go one more turn, but that one turn can cost you the win.
Yeah, for sure. And the other thing I'm really curious to explore is how you're supposed to draft this format when you don't get... Like, my drafts have all been, so far, merfolk, vampires, dinosaurs, pirates. Like, how you're supposed to draft when one of those things isn't open enough for your seat, and how you can still, like, try to get a deck that's going to 3-0 or 2-1 and make it to the finals, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's what's going to be interesting about this format once you're 100 drafts in or whatever.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And what's ultimately going to determine, like, your win rate and how good you are at the format. Because everybody's going to be good when they get the Nuts Vampires deck or the Nuts Pirates deck. You know what I mean?
Right. Everyone can see the text Merfolk on a card and pick it for their blue-green deck.
Yes.
Yeah. That will be interesting to see how that plays out over the next few weeks.
Yeah. So we've, at the beginning of these formats, I think we've got a tradition in the podcast of doing some rare encounters. Some rares we've run into that have maybe either gone up or down based on seeing them. One for me was Kinjali's Sunwing, the 2 and a white for 2/3 flyer. I think you pegged this card. My opponent played it on the other side of the battlefield, and I think the format's aggressive enough that Kinjali's Sunwing is just good.
Yeah.
It was very tough to play against, very tough to block, and it just really impressed me. Another one is Sanctum Seeker, that's the vampire, what were you calling it? The
Hellbiter.
Hellbiter, yeah.
Yeah.
That card is just stupid good in a vampire's deck, and I've lost to it, and it's pretty depressing when your opponent plays it and they're vampires. And I think we kind of said that in the set review, but I just wanted to bring up that one was a little overwhelming. And then Sunbird's Invocation, boy was I wrong about this card.
You know what's so funny is so we recorded the Rare Mythic review Sunday morning. I went to a pre-release event and I opened Sunbird's Invocation and I put it in my deck.
Oh, yeah, I remember you texting me that.
And the sentence that I said on the podcast when I re-listened to it was, I'm not going to be the first person to put this in my deck. I'm going to wait to see someone cast this against me.
At the pre-release.
At the pre-release, yeah. What do you think about it, Ben?
I was trying to think about why I thought it was good and why it's not as good as I thought it was. I think partly the format's more aggressive, but I think it's a little closer to Swarm Intelligence from the last set than I would like to admit.
Yeah.
Like, a very expensive enchantment that, like, yeah, Swarm Intelligence, when you play it, and if you've got some instants and sorceries in your hand, is probably going to win you the game. But, like, so would, like, a 6/6 trample for 6 mana. So, like, yeah. I played with this, and I lost one of my drafts because I had this in my deck. I drew it on, or whatever, I played it on turn 6, and then drew, like, land. And if it had been any other card that could attack or block, I would have won. Now, if I'd drawn, but, like, you just don't need to put a card in your deck like that that's that dependent on drawing other cards and hitting. And I mean, you can even miss after you... Yeah, it's just not good.
Yeah, I mean, like, when you play a 3-drop off of this and you miss, it's awful.
I think it's a very good sideboard card. That's how I would categorize it now.
I don't know. I still think it's, like... I mean, and I kind of had success with it. Like, I would put it as, like, a... I think I gave it an F in the set review. I think I'd probably be up to, like, D, maybe build around C, or, like, sideboard D, like... It's good if you feel like you're getting to the late game and you need gas, which a green-red deck kind of does, like, because you can get flooded in those decks if you're ramping correctly. So this sort of helps you, but it also is a do-nothing enchantment.
Sure. What, have you had any of those cards you've run into?
Yeah, so Settle the Wreckage, or Path of God, or Wrath to Exile, whatever you want to call it. I came in pretty hot on this card. I think I gave it an A- in the set review. And I would go down on it. I think this card gets a big knock against it because of the presence of Bright Reprisal and of slash all the other, like, flash tricks that exist at 5 mana. Because, so I found myself, I was playing against an opponent on Magic Online, like, on Tuesday or something. And they were keeping up their mana a lot, so I was, like, thinking about Bright Reprisal, and maybe, like, I maybe wasn't attacking, or I would, like, attack with a bad creature that I didn't really care about them. Like, they would get the 2-for-1, but it was off of a token or something.
Right, sure.
And then eventually they fired off Settle the Wreckage. I don't remember what happened. And they typed in the chat, like, felt like you were playing around that the whole game. And yeah. I was just accidentally playing around it because I was playing around Bright Reprisal.
Yeah.
So I think this card is a lot worse for me. And maybe I'm now too low on it and I need to come back up a little bit. But I think this card is a lot worse than I initially thought. I think it's and I had it cast against me. My opponent got my whole board of 4 creatures, but it was late enough in the game that then I just drew gas the rest of the game and still won.
Right. It's like, yeah.
The pulling out the lands from your deck when you do get 4 or 5 creatures is a pretty big impact on them than being able to draw relevant spells for the rest of the game. So I would now probably be putting it closer to like a B, B-.
That's, I think a B. Yeah.
Yeah. Jace is terrible.
Yes, I agree.
I've so played bad. Against it a couple times and beat it all those times. And I don't want to talk about the streamer showdown, but I did have it in my deck in that, and it did not go well for me.
Oh, no.
Also, if you do find Jace in your deck, be sure you play it pre-combat if you're going to plus, because I know the format has trained you to play your raid triggers after combat, and although Jace's plus is like a raid trigger, it needs to exist before combat happens.
Did that happen in the streamer showdown?
Yes.
Oh, no.
It's so unintuitive to me. I'm, like, trained to play these things post-combat, and I'm like, yeah, it's a raid trigger. It's plus raid trigger. Oh, so embarrassing. So that's how that card works. Treasure Map is, I think, fantastic. Like, I don't remember what we graded it, but I'm higher on it. I've played with it and played against it, and it's very, very strong. It's like impact. This is the 2-mana artifact that scries. You scry 3 times with it, and then you get to flip it into the land that sacks a treasure to draw a card. And I just think this card is really, really strong.
Yeah, that's good to know. I haven't played with or against it yet. I've been largely unimpressed with the flip artifacts.
I think that's the only good one.
Like the, is it the compass that searches up a land and turns into Maze of Ith?
Thaumatic compass, yeah.
Yeah, that, I played against that today and I was not super impressed by it.
Yeah, it's, I think the treasure map is the only good one of those. Admiral Beckett Brass, I don't think is that good. I think, basically this, I think we were pretty excited about this card, but it's really just a pirate lord and that second line of text is not relevant because if you're hitting them with 3 pirates that have +1/+1, they're dead anyway.
Yeah.
So you would just rather have Fel Flagship in a pirate deck because it's going to pump your pirates anyway and it's colorless. And so it doesn't force you to play all 3 colors the way that Beckett Brass does.
Yeah.
But those are the rares that I felt like were worth like talking about because they've moved a bit for me.
Yeah, another rare that's moved for me a little bit is the Legion's Landing, the one that flips into Odonto, the flip land.
First, I
think
that card's so wrong.
Yeah, I think that card's very real and very good in Vampires.
Yeah, and it's the fact that you can draw it, it can flip off, it doesn't have to flip off of this attacking. Like, you can play it late in the game and attack with 3 creatures and it flips immediately is really strong, and it just like, the fact that the vampire deck can really turn 1/1 vampires into real threats with Anointed Deacon or the 1/1 flyer that pumps attacking vampires, like, it's just a really good card.
Yeah. And some other cards I just want to lower my grades on. Axis of Mortality or whatever. However excited I was about these cards, I should not have been excited about them at all. Mm-hmm. We were trying to win. Axis of Mortality, that's the enchantment that lets you flip life totals. There's just not time to do that in this format. And I think Boneyard Parley is another one that we were pretty high on together. I think March of the Drowned is just probably better than Boneyard Parley.
Yeah, I think it depends. Maybe Parley is more of a sideboard card if your opponent has good bombs to get. But I don't know if it's like March of the Drowned is probably better on power level, but I also don't think that the 2 cards belong in the same decks.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Like Boneyard Parley goes in a green ramp deck.
Probably.
As a payoff there.
I mean, maybe it does go in also like a control treasure deck.
Yeah, at least at the moment, I'm on like Cab's strategy to borrow from limited resources. Like, I want all of my cards to affect the board in this format. Sure. So, yeah, I think all those clunky flip artifacts are going down a notch for me, and Sunbird's Invocation similarly. Yeah, just cards that are not impacting the board, I think, are a risk in this format. And then I just have some commons that have impressed me or overperformed, and some of them have come up already. We've talked about one with the wind. March of the Drowned, I'm madly in love with. I haven't gotten to play that deck yet. Have you played against March of the Drowned much?
I've played a deck that had 2 of them in it.
It's so backbreaking when you trade things off and your opponent plays March of the Drowned and it costs 1 mana. Like when they get 2 pirates back with it, they can often replay later in the game one or both of the pirates that they cast. Like because March of the Drowned, I think we missed, or at least I certainly did not consider how cheap it was when I was like in the set review. I was just looking at like, raised deads aren't great. You know, like this doesn't have cycling. It's raised 2 dead. Yeah. And for only 1 mana, I think other raised dead effects in the past that have raised 2 creatures have cost like 3 or 4 mana and been like clunky and unwieldy. And March of the Drowned is like a Corvette compared to that. It runs so smooth. And then Skullduggery. I've finally gotten to play with in this black white value deck, but pretty much every time I've played Merfolk or like an aggressive deck, I've just thought if my opponent has Skullduggery, I get blown out here. Like the amount of times I think that when I'm thinking about combat is just disgusting.
And it's another thing where I just feel like I'm going to be leveling myself this whole format of just like, well, how do I play around Skullduggery? Because, like, you just can't. You can't play around someone holding up a black mana the whole game. That card is going, is just very, very difficult to play around.
Yeah, I think the format's going to reward, but I do think it's important. I think it's a big part of the format. I think Skullduggery, Vampire Zeal, the one mana combat tricks, and the Merfolk one that pumps, puts counters, what's that called?
River Herald's Boon. Boom.
Yeah. Oh, you got there. You nailed it. I think the format's really going to reward, like, playing those correctly and playing around them correctly.
Yeah.
I think those are going to be a big part of the format. Deadeye Tormentor has gone up for me a little bit. I think partially because of how good I think March of the Drowned is. Like, it's pretty depressing.
That's the discard raid?
Oh, yeah, I should say that. It's the two and a black for the 2/2 that discards when you... Yes, what you just said. I don't need to repeat
I'll say what the card does, and then you say what the card does, okay? That's how we're going to do it.
That sounds great. We'll make the podcast twice as long. People think we're really smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, partially because of how good I think March of the Drowned is. Like, it's pretty backbreaking. I've had that happen to me in some games where they nabbed a card on turn 3 and then nabbed another card after they March of the Drowned it back.
Mm-hmm.
And Headstrong Brute has also impressed me a lot in the Pirates decks, mostly because, like, March of the Drowned. I think March of the Drowned is, like, March of the Drowned and Pirates Cutlass are big reasons that Pirates is good.
I think Pirates Cutlass also goes up for me a lot. Like, Headstrong Brute turn 3 with another Pirate in play, or even without, and then Pirates Cutlass turn 4 with a 2-drop... Or even without, like, just a 5/4 attacking on turn 2 or on turn 4 is really tough. It's a big boy.
Yeah, you can't go overboard with them, though. I think I played it earlier today. My opponent had identified that Pirate's Cutlass was good and had at least 3 of them in their deck because they had 3 of them on the battlefield. Mm. And I beat them because they had too many equipment and not enough creatures. So I think 2 is probably the sweet spot for Pirate's Cutlass in a dedicated pirate deck.
I think it's like if you've got like 15 or less creatures, probably 1 equipment.
Yeah, that seems right. I think I might play 2 in a Pirates deck. It's very good.
If, like, most of those 15 are Pirates, yeah, that seems fair. And then maybe if you're pushing, like, into 15 to 18, maybe you can get 2 Pirates Cutlasses in there. But I agree, like, that takes up a real slot when you don't... I mean, it's the same way, like, especially because that isn't that deck probably going to have 1 with the winds, too? Like, you can't have all these creature augmenting cards without creatures.
Right, yeah, yeah.
What else you got here?
Thrash of Raptors, that hits pretty hard in the Dinosaurs decks.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the best dinosaur payoffs for red. That's the 3 and a red for the 3/3. Gets +2/+0 and trample when you have another dinosaur. And then Jade Guardian, I think, is its own archetype, even outside of dedicated merfolk. I think the Jade Guardian with the presence of one with the wind and Mark of the Vampire is the hexproof merfolk, the 2/2 that puts a +1/+1 counter on a merfolk.
Yeah.
It's just disgusting. And it's disgustingly good in merfolk with one with the wind.
Yeah. I also want to shout out to you. So basically, like, the whole last week when I was streaming, I just kept being like, I think 3 times a stream I would be like, well, Ben was right about this. Well, Ben really called this. Like, Drover of the Mighty is just absurd. And you called that. But the thing I want to bring up as a common that has impressed me is Colossal Dreadmaw, the 6-mana 6/6 trampler.
Oh, yeah.
It is just bigger than everything, and it having trample is so ridiculous. Because, like, that's the card that vampires really doesn't want to see when they're facing dinos.
Right.
Because you can't chump with your little 1/1 lifelinkers.
Nope, you can't.
So that card is really, really strong, and I think is sort of the bread and butter of the Dino Ramp deck.
Yeah, it's good. It's no longer in my top green commons. I do think it's very good, though, still. But I think it had no business
being in your top green commons. But let's get to that now, shall we?
Yeah, let's move on over there. We're going to re-rank the commons here. My top 3 commons for white now are Territorial Hammerskull, which is the 2 and a white for the 2/3 dinosaur that taps a creature when it attacks. My number 2 is Pious Interdiction, which is 3 and a white for the pacifism effect that gains you 2 life when it enters the battlefield. And then my number 3 is Bishop Soldier, which is 1 and a white for the 2/2 lifelinking vampire. What are yours?
I am not sure. So I have the first two, I think I'm with you on Hammerskull being better than Pious Interdiction. I am not sure about Bishop Soldier over the, I don't know card names. Card names are overrated. The Paladin, the 3 and a white for the...
Bishop of the Bloodstained, I think?
No, that's the black uncommon.
Oh, dang it.
It might be Paladin of the Bloodstained. But so the 3 and a white for the 3/2 vampire that makes a 1/1 lifelinker when it comes into play.
Yeah.
I think I have that higher than Bishop Soldier right now. But I think that's also, like, at that point, like, pack one, pick one. If I had to choose between Bishop Soldier and that, I would take Paladin. So that's sort of how I'm thinking about it. But you're probably not doing that because you probably have a better option in the pack. So then it's sort of curve considerations. Like, if I have two of these and no two drops, then I'm taking two of the paladins and no two drops, I'm taking the soldier. But like, if I feel like my two drops are okay, then I'm going to take the paladin.
Sure. Well, I guess I'm giving the nod to bishop soldier. I think it's good in any white deck. Like, I think you're just, it's just a good card. I think I was thinking it only went in vampires, and I think it's like a 2/2 lifelinker is for two is just way above rate. I mean, I like the paladin,
the paladin too, and in any white deck too.
I think it can, but I guess I'm on the format being pretty aggressive and me really wanting to hit.
Yeah.
Like if you're not, oh, that's the other thing I haven't mentioned about the format yet. I think the die roll, I've never cared about the die roll that much.
Yeah.
I care about the die roll more than I ever have in this format. Like when I don't win and you don't play a two drop on turn two, it feels so bad.
Yeah. It's tough. So you're, and the lifelink on this card is so real because of what we talked about with it being aggressive. So you might be right. And I'm interested to check in on how I feel about this in the coming weeks.
Yeah. What do you got for blue?
Oh, so for blue, I am slightly different. I still have Water Trap Weaver as number one, the two and a blue merfolk 2/2 that taps a thing when it comes into play, and that thing doesn't untap, and its controller's next untap step.
Mm-hmm.
I have Run Aground number two.
Okay.
The three and a blue for the instant to put target artifact or creature on top of its owner's library.
Yeah, that card's
and
good.
And I think it's probably just got to be one with the wind, number three, right?
Oof, that's aggressive.
I think so. So you have Shaper Apprentice on your list, right? That's the one and a blue 2/1.
I do, yeah.
I think that just like only goes in a dedicated merfolk deck.
Yeah, and one with the wind's just good in. Yeah, and you could convince me there.
One with the wind
is
going in any blue deck, right? You're putting that in blue black, in blue red, in blue green, and in blue white. Like, it's just gonna be good.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Yeah, but you've convinced me. You don't have to twist my arm. I love that card.
I know. That's why I'm surprised hearing you talk about it to not see it in your top three. And I think we might get to a point where One with the Wind is above Run Aground.
I could see that being the case.
I don't think it's going to edge out. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say my list is Water Trap Weaver 1, Shaper Apprentice number 2, Run Aground number 3. I've just been jamming Merfolk. I've done Merfolk 3 of my drafts so far, and it's so fun to play. So I think that's probably why mine are the way they are right now.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Yeah, and then on to black, I've got Vanquish the Weak number 1 still. That's destroy target creature with converted mana cost 3 or less for 2 and a black. Contract Killing number 2, 3 black, destroy target creature, make 2 treasure. And then number 3, I've got Skullduggery, single black, target creature you control gets +1/+1, and target creature and opponent controls gets -1/-1.
Yeah, I still got Skymarch Bloodletter above Skullduggery. That's the 3-mana 2/2 flying vampire that drains your opponent for 1 when it comes into play. And I don't anticipate getting to feel like Skullduggery is better than that, but Skullduggery is very, very good. I think it's a really strong card. It's more than a combat trick, folks.
Yeah, very good. And then red, I've got fire. I've joined you on red. I've just Fire Cannon Blast number 1. Most of these have been me changing to what you had initially.
What can I
joined
say?
Joined you with Water Trap Weaver. Red, I joined you with Fire Cannon Blast as number 1. I still have Stormfleet Pyromancer as number 2 over Unfriendly Fire. 4 and a red for a 3/2 with a raid trigger of deal 2 damage to a creature player upon entering the battlefield. And then number 3 is Unfriendly Fire, the 4 and a red, deal 4 damage to a creature player at instant speed.
So I'm going to diverge from you here.
Oh, okay.
I am going Fire Cannon Blast number 1.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going Unfriendly Fire number 2.
Uh-huh.
I think Unfriendly Fire is a bad thing for this format.
Why is that?
Because it really feels... It is ending so many games.
It really is, yeah.
It doesn't feel good. Like,
no, it does not.
I guess it feels like fine to play, but to play against it feels really bad. And you can splash it, and so like then you might like you'll get you might be even thinking about it, but not because you're not seeing like mountains on your opponent's board. It's just like Inferno Jet cheaper, but now it can kill something instead of having cycling. And the way that Inferno Jet was always something you had to have in the back of your mind, but it was only uncommon. This is now at common, and 4 to the face is just it's so much. So
it is a lot.
I'm not crazy about this card existing, but I am going to put it as my number 2. And I'm actually going to put Fathomfleet Firebrand as number 3. That's
close for me for number 4, yeah.
2-mana 2/2 with smoke breathing, 1 and a red to get +1/+0. Patent pending.
Lords of Limited patent pending.
I really do like Stormfleet Pyromancer, but especially because Unfriendly Fire is also a 5 drop, I think that's a knock against it because they're in such competition for an expensive spell slot that I feel like if you want one in your deck, you're going to get one. And the Fathomfleet Firebrand being a premium 2-drop that scales with the game, I think pushes it up into the top three for me.
And it excels in Pirates, but it's good in any red deck.
Exactly. Yeah, you're playing that in any red deck.
Yes. Yep. It's the best red 2-drop for sure by a mile.
Yeah.
And there's this awkward tension. I don't know if you've experienced this with but I just thought of this. Like this awkward tension in the Dinosaurs decks that I don't really like with cards like Tillinolly's Knight and like the red 2-drop that ramps you and gives them haste. Mm-hmm. And then like the white 3-drop or 4-drop that's like the 3/3 flyer if you control a dinosaur. There's this tension of like cards that are dinosaurs and cards that are not dinosaurs that care about having dinosaurs. So like finding the right mix of those I think is going to be interesting in the format.
Yeah, I haven't really seen like a white red aggro dino deck yet. I've seen like a white red aggro deck, but I haven't seen it like based around Pterodon Knight. Like I was so wrong about Pterodon Knight. That card is not very good, and at least so far in my opinion. I still think Tillinolly's Knight is pretty good, just because a 2-mana 2/2 is a good failsafe, and then when it's a 3/3 it's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
but yeah, I definitely know what you mean of just like cards that care about dinosaurs but they're not dinosaurs themselves.
Yeah, I wish there were. Yes, I wish they were dinosaurs. That's why. Yeah, that feels. Yeah, it's hard. I think Merfolk and Vampires don't suffer from that same problem.
Yeah, for sure.
So I was drafting a dinosaurs deck and I got done drafting and I was like, yeah, I've got tons of dinosaurs. And then I was like, oh this isn't a dinosaur, why is that not a dinosaur? Anyway, on to green. My number one is still Tashana's Wayfinder.
That's
two and a green for the 2/2 explorer. Number two for me is Deep Root Warrior, probably as a nod to my love of Merfolk. It's one and a green for the 2/2, and when it attacks, if it gets blocked, it gets +1/+1. And I think it's just going in every green deck, like that wants to be aggressive.
With that caveat, I agree with you.
Yeah. So I guess you're thinking there's green black ramp decks and green red dinos decks that don't want Deep Root Warrior.
Yeah, like I had Deep Root Warrior in the deck at the GP, and I just didn't love it because like it's not like it might be. It's hopefully like trading early, but as a late game draw, it's miserable because like, if I'm late game, I want like a bigger thing. So I'm not crazy about it in non-green-blue merfolk deck, really. Or like, I think there might be a green-white aggro deck if it exists. But yeah, and just non-aggro decks, I don't love it.
Yeah. And then my number three is still Begrudgingly Pounce. I'm going to try to move it off there by the end of the format.
You pegged that, man. Man, is Pounce not that great in this format. Like, it basically only goes in a dinosaur deck because everything is small. So you're like 2-for-1-ing yourself unless you have a dinosaur to fight with.
Yep. That's what I remember. That's how I remember feeling about cards like that didn't give counters.
Yeah, that's
crazy. And it's amazing how much better like the 2-and-a-green thing that gives a +1/+1 counter feels when you've got it.
Savage is in the title and it is really appropriate. Like the fact that, but it's cheaper because again, that's only, I mean, that can go in a merfolk deck too, but if that's in a dinosaur deck, being able to go 1-mana +1/+1 fight a thing.
Oh yeah, that's disgusting in a dinosaur deck.
It's a savage stomp, man.
It is a savage stomp.
Yeah, so I agree. I have Tishana's Wayfinder as number one. I'm still probably putting Pounce at number two, and I've still got Grazing Whiptail as number three, the 4-mana 3/4 reach.
Interesting. I just, like, that card, I don't know where it goes. It goes in the Dinosaurs deck, I guess.
It goes in everything. It's a great deck. It's a great card.
You just think that card's, I guess I haven't played not like a non-aggressive green deck yet. Like, and even in my Dinosaurs decks, like, I've drafted red-green dinos once, twice maybe. Mm-hmm. It felt like I wanted Thrash of Raptors at the 4-drop slot and not that. Like, I guess that goes in a deck that wants to block or ramp a little bit more.
I might be bad at evaluating cards in aggro formats. It's something that I'm thinking. Like, I feel bad putting One with the Wind in my top three blue commons.
Well, yeah, it does not feel good. Well, I think that's partially goes back to, like, I think you and I both have listened to Limited Resources for forever.
Uh-huh.
And, like, I think that's a core tenet of, like, what Limited Resources teaches is like play cards that don't get you 2-for-1. Like, and that's like it's a very risky high variance card. Yeah. Like sometimes you're gonna play One with the Wind and you're gonna lose because your opponent like 2-for-1'd you or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's partially why that feels so bad. And I feel similarly.
Yeah, but so if it's not Grazing Whiptail, then I'd probably put Colossal Dreadmaw there, but I don't feel like I can put Colossal Dreadmaw in there because like Colossal Dreadmaw is only good in a ramp dino deck, whereas Deep Root Warrior is only good in an aggro green deck. And I feel like Grazing Whiptail sort of toes the line between those two, and I'm like generally happy to have it in any green deck.
Well, but if you're ramping, don't you want to go like 3-drop New Horizons into like the 6/6 Trampler though, and just skip Grazing Whiptail altogether?
No, but so here's the thing I think also about this format, which I probably should have talked about earlier. Oh, wait, and I do. I want to talk about two other comments. Sorry, I know this episode is crazy long, everybody. that this format is soft to flyers.
I agree.
And Grazing Whiptail really like shuts down your offensive flying opponent. Like that game where I was down to one life against that pro at 20, it was a 20 life, and he had a bunch of flyers on board. I had 3 Grazing Whiptails on my deck, and I needed all of them.
Yeah.
And I think that's very good. And so the two commons I want to talk about, one is Cobbled Wings is good.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think is main deckable in this format.
I agree.
Just because you're going to get to those board stalls, and there's not a lot of interaction with flyers. And two, I think Shore Strike is a very good card and has moved up for me and is, I think, definitely better than Crash the Ramparts. So Shore Strike is the 1 on red, +3/+0 first strike trick.
Uh-huh.
And Crash the Ramparts is 2 in a green for the +3/+3 trample trick. And I think Shore Strike is much better because Shore Strike allows you to kill a bigger dinosaur, whereas Crash the Ramparts is probably allowing you to trade with a bigger dinosaur. That first strike is really relevant to like let your 3/3 kill a Colossal Dreadmaw, whereas Crash the Ramparts is not letting you do that without your creature dying. Those are two things I should have had on the list, but I was bad at preparing show notes.
No, that's interesting.
Shall we rank the commons overall?
Yeah, I'm curious to see what you've got. Number one, I've got Vanquish the Weak still. That's 2 and a black, destroy target creature power 3 or less. Number two, I've got Territorial Hammer Skull. That's the 2 and a white for the 2/3 dino that taps something when it attacks. Number three, Fire Cannon Blast. That's the 1 red, deal 3 to a creature. And then if you trigger Raid, it does 6. Number four, I've got Water Trap Weaver, 2 and a blue for the 2/2 that locks something down when it enters the battlefield. And then number five, I've got Pious Interdiction, which is the 3 and a white for the pacifism that gains you 2 life when it enters the battlefield.
Yeah, so I'm still on you as Vanquish is the best common, and I've got Fire Cannon Blast and Hammer Skull switched. So I have Blast as 2 and Hammer Skull as 3. I've got Weaver at 4. The Weaver might be 5, and then I have Contract Killing over Pious Interdiction at 5.
Interesting. I really like the 2 life gain on Pious Interdiction.
I really like getting a thing dead so you don't get to keep raiding with your 2 blue red uncommon, you know?
Yeah.
But we're splitting hairs here, but and pretty telling that green doesn't have any commons in that list.
It is, yeah, for sure.
That was a doozy.
That was a doozy. Good place to wrap it up there?
Yeah, I think so.
I think there was like a ton of good information in that episode though. Like if you've only done 1 or 2 drafts, or even if you've done 10, like I think there's a lot to be gleaned from these early episodes. Because you and I are both jamming drafts and we both are like obsessed and we want to learn as much as we can. So
we're like not only jamming drafts, but also like reading articles and watching videos and watching Twitch.
Yes, so. and while I'm drafting, I'm like watching Skolar, who drafted. He played Magic for like 15 hours today or something. He's
the
ridiculous.
Man is a machine.
Yeah. Every time I go into his channel, I type uptime, and he's the only person I do that to because I just always want to see, because sometimes it's like 15 and sometimes it's 8 and sometimes it's 2. Like sometimes you catch him early, but he always streams for a long time when he streams.
Yeah.
Anyway, next week we're going to probably dive into the color pairs, what those look like and how to draft them, maybe what some signals are for that a color pair might be open, and take an initial look at that. And as always, thank you to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
Anyone wants to get in touch with me or Ben directly, a couple good places to do that. You can check us out on Twitch, of course, where they're streaming, me almost every day. Ben, when he has a spare minute in his very, very busy life. But we're there at twitch.tv/LordTupperware. That's me. And twitch.tv/MrMetronome. Mr. is spelled out. We're both also at Twitter under those same usernames. And I also have a YouTube channel, so you can go check that out. The best way to find that is either the link on my Twitch channel or links to those on Twitter. But I've got one Ixalan draft up now, and hopefully more to come in the coming weeks.
Yeah, and if you've got any feedback about the show or questions for us, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com, and we will also have the achievement list ready to go for the next episode.
Yeah. Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Yep. Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.